$1,000 of miscellaneous expenses. So I'm going to dive into a little bit more detail. Any questions about sort of the overall picture and where we started and where we end up with the proposed?
Andrew, I apologize, but when will we decide how to spend the capital set aside $700,000?
As part of this conversation. Yep. Yep. In terms of new general fund requests, and in your packet that came around is what we affectionately refer to as the F1 report. It is towards the end of the packet, I think about three pages in, and it's titled General Fund Reconciliation. It's Exhibit 4. And so I will not go exactly in order in terms of what's here. I'm going to talk what's funded first and what's not funded. But again, you can follow along in terms of what's there. Bureau submitted $5.9 million of new requests and program carry-forward requests for the general fund. CBO recommended funding, and again, we sent our reviews to you about a week ago. We recommended funding $1.6 million of those requests. And just to remind you, the City Budget Office criteria, which is based on city financial policy for spending general fund contingency, we only recommend for requests that are urgent and unforeseen, and that cannot be absorbed, or we don't believe can be absorbed within existing Bureau budgets. And I think one of the principles as we go through this that we should keep in mind, and it's similar to the conversation we just had about the 1670 budget in total, is we do have a $580 million general fund. And I think the first place that bureaus and council should look is within that existing $580 million before going to contingency because of some of the unknowns that may come up during the year. So hitting the highlights in terms of what we recommended and then in terms of what the additional things included in the mayor's proposed bump, just about $600,000 for 11 police background investigators. The police bureau currently has 35 vacancies with about 90 officers eligible for retirement and projecting a 52% increase in overtime to cover needed shifts. The backgrounding process is very lengthy, and we saw this in the early and mid-2000s when they sort of hit a critical mass where it became very difficult for the police bureau to hire and get enough people in the pipeline to, again, offset some of those overtime and staffing costs. So, again, recommended for the 11 background investigators.
So, Mayor, could I at some point get a briefing on why it takes so long and what exactly is checking? I saw an article in the paper that said that it takes one investigator 7 months to check into a single applicant. Sounds like they go and interview childhood friends or something.
Yes, they actually do. So, yeah, I will arrange that with Brewster because it is a little vexing, I think, to all of us that it really takes that many person hours to document the background check for a new officer. Yes. Short answer to your question, yes, we will.
$425,000 for housing choice vouchers. This includes $250,000 for cash transfer to households for leasing expenses, $150,000 for staff to provide housing search assistance, and a small $25,000 for a study to update the HUD's fair market rate.
So Andrew, are those all part of the housing $10 million?
Yes, I believe so. It hasn't been exactly defined what's in that bucket. They are part of the $2.7 million that I mentioned is in the bump for housing.
So that's a question, Mayor, that I have. If we're going to be putting the $10 million into the CAL, the council has the right to decide how it's spent. So if it just goes into the CAL, then when would we get the proposed ways of spending it back?
When we see a budget proposal, because even though it's in the CAL, it's still in the budget proposal. But I'm assuming that if we approve these bump requests, that the dollars we're committing to the housing emergency here count against our pledge overall.
I'd like to see that very carefully delineated and spelled out so that we know when we've got there.
Okay. To pose a question to Director Krieger about that ask, since
he's
here
behind me.
Oh, right there. So my question is, the current challenge we face with the Housing Choice Voucher Program, which is also known as Section 8, is that there aren't enough units available for people to rent. So the success rate has come below 75%. In the past, the success rate was influenced by the way in which the program was administered, and so there was a reform effort to make it work better. And there are other factors in the past that caused us to either fall below or above what is an optimal success rate. But my understanding, Mr. Director, is that the principal reason that the housing authority of Home Forward is experiencing only about a 75% success rate, meaning only about 75% of voucher holders can find a landlord to rent an apartment within the statutory period of time, or otherwise they have to turn it back, which is terrible for that family. It also leaves money on the table for the community. My understanding is it has to do with supply. So how does this particular ask help us remedy the structural problem we have that there's a shortage of units available for renting?
I'm glad you asked that question, Commissioner Fish, members of council. I've operated housing authorities in a couple of different states, so I'm pretty close to the details on this. And the Home Forward came to us initially with a request for two elements which are embedded in this proposal. One was to provide financial resources, which they will match dollar for dollar, for navigators. And these would be people with cultural competence to assist tenants who have a housing choice voucher but need someone to advocate for them with the landlord themselves, often non-English speakers, perhaps immigrants, who can't navigate the system by themselves. Home Forward does receive administrative support from HUD to actually administer the program, but not a level of funding sufficient to allow a culturally competent subcontractor to do that work. The other factor that we've included in this is some bridge funding to assist households that have perhaps a flawed credit history or a flawed tenant history. Landlords are increasingly just using credit scores as a classification by which to determine whether or not they want to rent to someone. And of course, they're picking the highest possible credit score. If someone has a lien, a judgment, a foreclosure, a short sale, even though they may be income eligible, they will likely not be considered. There are some practical issues that we can help with. One is that if you have a prior unpaid utility bill, A, it'll show up on your credit, and B, you won't be able to get your power turned on until you have that removed. So we're providing some bridge funding, which will be matched dollar for dollar by Home Forward to help alleviate some of those issues. And then the more profound one that we've been very successful in negotiating our regional partners with is to recalibrate the fair market rent itself. HUD has an office called the Office of Policy Development and Research. They develop a fair market rent, which is a standard promulgated around the country for every metropolitan area. And it's indexed by family size and bedroom type. So a studio, one bedroom, two, three, and four bedroom unit can be rented up to a maximum fair market rent standard. The fair market rent method that HUD uses data trending back 3 years. So in a market where the velocity is changing rapidly, the fair market rent standard is not accurate. HUD does allow, at the expense of local municipalities, a jurisdiction to come up with their own fair market rent standard using something called a comprehensive economic study. We initially agreed with Home Forward to share the cost of that effort, and they, at HUD's urging, have enlisted also the support of Washington County, Clackamas County, and Vancouver. So it will be a metropolitan area-wide FMR standard. The vendor for this has just recently completed this work for Metro King County, and it happens to be Washington State University. So they have a team of researchers that have done this work. HUD accepted that methodology, and we would amend our intergovernmental agreement with Home Forward, which is currently an open source agreement for a range of services, to include these services.
So, Kurt, just on that point, Section 8 is the largest housing program in the state.
There's $70 million of rental assistance that flows to Multnomah County from that program.
It targets some of the most vulnerable families. The Home Forward has agreed to project-based quite a number of Section 8 vouchers, which is going to help us pencil out some of the deeply subsidized units that you are investing in. And so all of those are reasons to do this. I guess since we're the city council, I just also need to ask you, because we don't administer this program, are you asking the city to contribute because Home 4 doesn't have sufficient resources of its own to cover this cost?
Indeed, we are. I think it's a good investment of resources. At the present time, just to frame the issue, $70 million of rental assistance comes to Multnomah County, most of which is used inside the city of Portland. Housing Choice voucher recipients pay one-third of their income for rent, and the voucher pays the difference between their one-third and the fair market rent standard. So Home Forward cuts a check every month to hundreds of landlords to pay for that difference. So the renters are essentially held harmless, if you will, from any rent increases as long as it's within that fair market rent standard. The 30% covers rent and utilities, which I think is an important point, which allows them, of course, other net revenue to cover expenses such as food and medical. So it's very helpful from the economic mobility standpoint. It provides family resilience. It keeps kids in school, and it helps families succeed economically. Home Forward receives funds to administer the program from HUD, but it's an administrative fee just to allocate the resources and to monitor the overall program, not to provide the deeper, richer service package that we think is necessary. And because we are electing to do our own fair market rent standard, that's a cost that we would absorb here regionally, which we think is a good investment of funds.
I really appreciate that description. In fact, I'd like to get a transcript of it because it was so clear. And I think given that we've declared a state of emergency, given that there's 23,000 households in our community that are deeply vulnerable at or below the poverty line, the more that we can do to boost the success rate and get those vouchers into circulation, the better we are as a community. And having 25% of vouchers go unused any one time is a calamity in this market. So
I think it's worth mentioning that as recently as 2011, the success rate, the placement rate, was 91%. In 2015, it's 75%. So we've seen a precipitous decline in the utilization. And that's giving folks 120 days to find an apartment with an extension of up to 60 days. So they really have half a year to find an apartment. And even then, only 75% are doing so.
Yeah, I also had a question about the Housing Bureau analysis here. And I was wondering if it made more sense to do that now or wait until we get to it. And okay. So on page 47 of the materials that we were presented, there's a paragraph that talks about the $16.173 million that are being moved into the next fiscal year. And down at the bottom, it talks about all the things that have to take place prior to construction. And it is a lengthy list, but I couldn't help but wonder, you know, in a city which is having such issues with affordable housing, this list of things that has to happen before the project loan can be closed, it hasn't changed. So or if it has changed, please let me know. So this is a pipeline that's well known. I'm just wondering what reason there is that the Housing Bureau couldn't get this money out the door and allocated within this fiscal year and is having to delay it.
Well, I'm sure as every commissioner knows, capital projects often take more than one fiscal year. In case of housing, 18 to 36 months is not unusual for a project to obtain the necessary permits, attract the other financing necessary. The Housing Bureau is often the first money in these projects. So we, for example, today will announce the availability of some $61.5 million in additional tax increment financing and federal funding. The applicants for those funds will have until February to submit their applications. We will make a funding decision prior to the state allocation of low-income housing tax credits. Applicants that are using tax credits then apply to Oregon Housing and Community Services for those tax credits. And they usually wait until they have an indication of whether or not they will get the tax credits before they earnestly begin the permit process, because they don't know if they have a high likelihood of funding or not and will not likely go out of pocket for those expenses. In some instances, we do provide pre-development funding, and a few nonprofits such as Bridge have their own pre-development funding, and they may choose to simultaneously do design development at the same time that they're accumulating funding. So once they have the tax credits, they can essentially proceed and close in a timely fashion. Design development process, it includes often design review, could take them a year in design development before we are able to close the loan. So the multitasking of both the design development and the permit process and the accumulation of the other necessary funding often takes 18 to 36 months. So we are, in this case, recognizing that some projects have had to be moved forward to do so.
Just a quick follow-up. So that figure is typical year over year of carryover from the previous year as a result of not being able to get all the projects out the door in time?
I think it's representative. I haven't seen a trend analysis to know if it's typical or not. Yeah.
Well, it begs the question of whether or not, like, doing this as an annual, I guess there's no choice. But, I mean, for something like this, looking at a multi-year budget may make more sense. I don't know.
Okay. Moving on then, in terms of what's included in the bump. So we've talked about the background investigators and the housing, at least the housing choice vouchers piece. There's $220,000 in program carryover. $88,000 of that is in ONI for small neighborhood grants. There's a small innovation grant in BHR, and $121,000 in COCO support funding in the mayor's office. In terms of other new packages, there's $88,000 for the city's share of our cash contribution regarding the Columbia River levy and the further study of the levy as we move forward. There's $80,000 in unspent PDC. Essentially, it's encumbrance carryover. It gets treated a little bit differently because they're not a city bureau, but it's unspent funds from last year. $61,000 for a new IPR investigator in the auditor's office. The office did request two positions. CBO recommended one of those two positions since the rules and requirements around House Bill 2002 are still forthcoming. And I think we note in our review that the auditor may need additional resources once those rules are established. $60,000 is included for eviction prevention services through the Gateway Center for Victims of Domestic Violence. $49,000 for the Bureau of Development Services to pay for waived demolition appeal fees. I think it's worth pointing out on this one, we were surprised to find out that this is around the city's council's recent decision to give more access to the city appeals process to our code hearings code officer, that BDS is concerned about the use of development permit fees to pay the costs of that hearing. So essentially when that fee is waived, concerned about their ability to subsidize, because they still have to pay for the hearing that takes place, use development fees. We did ask the city attorney, who said that there is enough of a legal question that there needs to be some clarity around it. And so we, CBO recommended, and it's included in the mayor's proposed bump, that they get that $49,000 in the current year, but also that council direct them to work with the state to really get clarity around that. It seems to me that this is all part of the permitting process, including the appeals process, and those development fees should be available for that. But again, there needs to be some additional legal clarity from the state.
My recollection is we specifically exempted the demo piece because we had just had that discussion and with a different process. So the Title 24 demo appeal was exempted from the auditor's appeal.
The request we got was, again, to pay for those appeals. I think it's of neighborhood associations that appeal demolitions, that when we waive that fee, there's still a cost. BDS may have more detail.
Yeah, I'm going to need, I don't necessarily need to have it now, but I'd like more information on how many appeals have come in. I'm really surprised that it's 49,000 because I don't know that there have been that many demo appeals. But in particular, we had that conversation when we had the council directive about the other kinds of appeals and specifically exempted the Title 24 appeals.
Small amount for the Citizens Utility Board mailers. $5,000 was included in the budget. It's going to be about $1,600 more than that. And then
Before you move on, I'm just questioning why you're not recommending, and the mayor hasn't recommended funding the Institute on Aging position for PSU.
And I should note actually that did inadvertently got left out of our review, so I apologize for that. If you looked for any narrative about it, it was submitted to us, to our office, but it did get dropped out of our reviews. We did make sure it was included here. From CBO's perspective, it's not an urgent or unforeseen request. There was a much larger request in the 15-16 budget process, which council did not fund, and this particular request is for salaries, staff costs of a professor and a graduate student up at PSU, as well as about $10,000 of PSU overhead. To us, it didn't seem urgent or unforeseen for use of contingency funding.
So I would expect an amendment to be proposed at the budget.
In addition, then, there's $2.3 million in the mayor's proposed bump for shelter-related costs, again, related back to the housing state of emergency, again, which brings the total, including the vouchers we've talked about for housing and homeless investments, to $2.75 million. And of that amount, $1 million of that is capital upgrades to the Sears facility to make it available for use as a temporary shelter. The Sears facility upgrades overall are about $1.9 million. Facilities believes, and I do want to stress, I think it's still a low confidence estimate, but they are working, you know, to develop it further. They think for about $1 million they could get the facility ready to open as a potential emergency shelter.
And these are, as I understand them, capital improvements to that facility that are required to be carried out for its intended purpose as a West Side Emergency Services Facility. In other words, ADA improvements, installation of an elevator, those kinds of capital improvements are required under our disposition agreement with the federal government. Regardless of its temporary use, we still need to get on with the work for its ultimate use.
$900,000, as we mentioned earlier, set aside from general fund contingency to support the current year costs of implementing the Parks Arbitration Award. This wasn't requested as a decision package because, again, Parks, I think, had gotten direction to wait until the spring, but we wanted to make sure that some contingency funding was set aside to ensure that it wasn't spent on something else in the meantime. And so, again, as Commissioner Fritz raised, I think that's a policy conversation for council to have. $100,000 is included for Parks Rangers and cleanup costs. These were additional hours that were worked last summer, so the costs have already been incurred.
So let me just address both of those, if I might interrupt. The ranger positions were agreed over the summer that was when the extra need was incurred, so we've already spent that money, so it'd be really nice if we get it back. But in terms of the paying for the current budget positions that are already in phase one, 86 positions, we're only getting $900,000 in this proposal. The estimated cost is 1.6 to 2.3. So that proposal means a $700 to $1.4 million cut within parks. And then I also noticed on your Cal set-aside target, which we're coming to later on the last page, Exhibit 6, that parks' Cal is only being increased by about $233,000. So it looks like we're being already asked to eat that ongoing cost of $1.6 to $2.3 million. So is a decision being made in this full bump that indeed Parks is asked to make that cut now?
So I think the sort of separating out the current year and 15-16 and 16-17 issues, what is in the bump for 15-16 is the assumption that $900,000 would be available to Parks from contingency and that the remaining costs would be absorbed by Parks, potentially from their compensation set-aside, which is about $700,000 is their share for the current year.
So that even wouldn't...
And the question, and we don't know what the current year costs are going to be. The $1.6 to $2.3 million, was a range. I think the latest information I think we have from the Parks Bureau is, I mean, they expect the current year cost to be lower than that, since, again, some of these costs, as we bring these employees over, they get pay raises at 6 months and a year under the city pay scale. So that's, I think, why that cost may be larger in the future than it is in the current year. But again, that cost was unknown. So we're not even sure it's going to necessarily be $1.6 million, but we're working closely with the Parks Bureau. For 16-17, that decision hasn't been made. I think that the way it would be made is through the budget process. We would expect to see Parks come forward with a request to increase. But as we've also seen, it may, the decision council's going to have is to give all new funding for that or partial new funding and require some offsets within the Bureau. And I think the overall question that you all are struggling with in this is, are some of those services going to be stopped as a result of that arbitration decision? And I think that's the conversation that we can have as part of the 16-17 budget.
Well, that's a budget discussion, but I don't even know how I would prepare the Parks proposed budget without having some direction from council, at least on the ones that we've already done. I don't understand why that's not going into Parks' cal.
Again, even with the ones that are already done, the question is, are those, if council is making the decision that all of those positions, were there 88 of those positions, I think, will continue into next year, or are they making the decision that we'll make sure they're funded, but we need to look at those positions next year, or we need to look elsewhere within the Parks Bureau to see if there are offsets?
I don't even see how we're going to get to the end of this year without making cuts, though. The $700,000 you said is in comp set aside is potentially not enough to cover, besides which there's other employees that might need to tap into the comp set aside.
That's right. Taking Parks comp set aside would require the Bureau to potentially make some reductions this year. Right. They would need to monitor very closely where they are.
But isn't it your estimate that the $700,000 that's in comp set aside plus this $900,000 is enough to get through this year based on the positions that have already been identified?
We think so far it's enough to get through this year. But it is, as we pointed out, taking comp set aside does mean that bureaus need to manage that. A lot of bureaus, particularly parks and police and fire, they all sort of, they know what their comp set aside amount is, and they look at that as they go through their year. So this would not be available to the Parks Bureau any longer.
For the purposes of comp set aside. It's not like we can tap into it for anything. So, you all remember that in the spring of this year, we had to borrow $1 million of general fund because we thought we might be tapping right up against the ceiling of what we had available. We ended up being able to make some additional savings and be able to pay that $1 million back. But that's how close the margin is in parks. When we have available, we have work to our budget. And because we have so many seasonals, we're able to provide the services with a very, very fine margin of error. So I'm just...
Well, I think
if council wants to make... That is a question that we will be having at the budget discussion next week. Does council want parks to take cuts this year?
Well, just to be clear, what I'm hearing you say, Andrew, is that through the end of this fiscal year, the combination of the set-aside and contingency plus the comp set-aside should be enough to cover those costs. If it falls short, don't we have two bumps where Commissioner Fritz and the Parks Bureau could come forward and ask for additional resources out of the contingency or elsewhere?
We have a spring bump and an overexpenditure ordinance, yeah, and assuming there are resources available.
And Commissioner Fritz has done a laudable job highlighting that may very well happen. But I also think the $900,000, as was explained to me, is at least carving some money out now to cover what we expect to be a contingent obligation.
The issue is, should parks have to drain all of their comp set aside, or should other bureaus be asked to contribute some of their comp set aside?
Mr. Fish has noted the need for us to maybe have another executive session to understand our situation completely. But this was a measure of support for the Bureau for now. That's what my intention was here. That plus the comp set aside that is available keeps the Bureau, or should keep the Bureau, whole until our next gate in this slalom that we're on here, trying to figure out exactly how we scroll those employees in and when.
I think we should be sending a message to all of our bureaus now that they need to be mindful of that comp set aside and trying to keep positions vacant, not just in parks.
The prudent suggestion, because one way or another, all the bureaus are going to share in this burden.
Well, under the current proposal, it's not.
We only have one general fund. I know, but one way or another, at the end of the day, all the bureaus are going to share in this burden because it's one general fund, and we're making a huge change in one of our bureaus.
One of the things that we did over the course of the recession was to have a mid-year cut of, I think, 1% across the board, and asked everybody to scrub their budgets and avoid capital purchases or whatever, and that actually netted a fair amount of money. So I would recommend that we have that discussion too.
Other things that are included in the bump, $32,000 for costs associated with the Last Thursday program over this last summer, $32,000 for the Police Bureau for increased costs associated with the PPCOA agreement, which has been negotiated, has not yet been ratified by council. And then $28,000 in support for the restorative justice program. And then Commissioner Novick, you talked about the capital set aside. So in this budget, the mayor's proposed budget includes $1.7 million in funding for major infrastructure and maintenance projects, exceeding that 50% allocation requirement, which was about $720,000. And the two major projects that are funded, the 911 center, uninterrupted power supply. There are some, that system is close to or in failure, and so there is some concern if we were to experience a power outage, the switch over to the backup generators may actually cause some explosions, which would be very bad and send the 911 center down. So again, there's, trying to see how that, $670,000 is included for that, and then as I mentioned previously, the $1 million for the Sears Center occupancy needs. And just as a reminder, those projects, we did receive $40 million of Bureau capital set-aside requests. We did put out the call to bureaus, even though we knew the amount was going to be very small. We did say, go ahead and submit your capital funding requests so that we can go through that scoring process now, and we use the same ranking process we have used in the past. And as we go forward into the next year's budget process, we assume those will all stay on the table. It's worth noting the BOEC request was the second highest funded. There was a traffic signal reconstruction project that was also highly funded, but sort of in our analysis, the citywide implications of the 911 center seemed to, and also the funding amount was a little bit more in line with the resources available.
So. Don't need it right at the moment, but I would like to hear, at the moment would be great, but how did we get to the point where we needed to make this investment in the uninterrupted power supply system, given that we already had one? Again, I don't necessarily need that right now, Commissioner Novick, unless you have it at your fingertips, but it would be good for us to know that how did we get to this place where this thing's on its last legs?
I can't articulate it well enough at my fingertips, but I'll get that to you.
Okay, thank you.
Ask for follow-up.
Somebody who owns a...
Mayor, my understanding is... my understanding in the briefing I got from Commissioner Novick's office is it's intended to make the system more resilient.
Seems to be working, that's
Those are the requests that are included. I'm happy to talk about any of the requests that are not included if there are questions about those. And you can see again on Exhibit 4 what is and is not. I wasn't going to go through every one of those, though, unless there's a desire to. Okay. Getting close to the end here. New positions that are in the bump. The mayor's proposed bump includes a net increase of 38.75 positions. That includes the creation of 22.5 full-time positions, 15 limited-term, converting 7 limited-term over to full-time, reclassifying 1 existing position, and converting 2 part-time positions. And I do want to note, for those of you who read our reviews carefully, I think we did double count the water positions in our reviews. We said 4. I believe it's only 2. The appropriate number is reflected in the numbers that came along. I apologize to Commissioner Fish for that.
So I understand that we get more positions in permit or fee-funded bureaus, development services, and the utilities. How do we do these conversions outside of the budget process with no additional resources?
So anything in the general fund, general fund bureaus can add new positions if they reallocate existing resources. So if they take from their materials and services and reallocate that, that's an ongoing source. They do not get new ongoing positions in the fall bump from contingency, though. Those would be limited term or one-time funded positions.
So it just strikes me that there's a lot of new positions that have been created by materials and services, and can we please scrub the materials and services lines to find out where there's some additional money that could go into other things?
So I have a question for that can be answered later, but in general, how many limited term positions end up being converted to full time positions? So you don't have to answer that now, but I'd like us to look at that.
Okay. Don, did you ever?
Are these the requests? Or are these what you're recommending?
This is what is in the mayor's proposed bump that will be voted on next week. Yeah, exactly. And then very quickly, I'll wrap up. Notable non-general fund changes that are happening in bureaus. The Bureau of Environmental Services, they're appropriating funds to refund $1.5 million of SDCs paid by the developer of the Hassalo on 8th for completion of their living system on-site treatment facility. And CBO makes a recommendation that should that facility prove successful or other developers seek to include similar features, the Bureau work to develop a consistent policy to address that type of development going forward. The Office of Neighborhood Involvement is adding 5 new positions related to the marijuana program. Portland Housing Bureau, which was discussed earlier, again, the deappropriation, the $16.2 million of affordable housing resources because those costs won't occur until 16-17. Bureau of Transportation, they're carrying over $3.4 million in garage revenue and putting in contingency in the parking facilities fund in the set-aside for major maintenance at the 10th and Yamo Garage, bringing the total set-aside to $7.2 million. And then the Water Bureau is creating 1 new environmental tech position to address increased water sampling demands. And cost for that position will be absorbed within resources for the current year. And then finally, at the very end, just budget notes and Cal target adjustments. This bump does direct Cal target adjustments related to the fair wage. Again, just adjusting because those were ongoing funds that you included in the budget. So adjusting those into the future so that again, those increased costs, we've now distributed those funds and will be accounted for. In terms of business license tax collection, there was a budget note from the 15-16 budget asked OMF to renegotiate the IGA with the county related to business license tax collection and pull in an extra $650,000, which we believe is the more appropriate allocation of those costs. And so their Cal target is reduced accordingly. It is worth noting that negotiation is not yet complete. And if it is unsuccessful, I think council is going to need to address that in the budget and consider what level of subsidy we want to continue for that operation, if any. And then finally, the housing Cal target adjustments that we've been discussing, the $5 million one-time and $5 million ongoing, are also included in the bump. I'm done.
Okay. Other questions either from our advisors or from council at this point? Again, proposals for amendments should be brought to the council session next week. Any other follow-up? We'll obviously get you that briefing from the police bureau. I'm going to get the same one, so others may want to hear that as well. So might even do it together since we won't be having a quorum. Anything else for the good of the order? Andrew, thank you very much to you and your team. Good work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've actually been talking recently to some pediatricians and like pediatric nurses and so forth. We're pretty excited about the idea. So if you're, Don told me that he was looking at pursuing it a while ago, and if we have board hearings on it, I could probably deliver some doctors and nurses.
I think at he brought it to the board, and the board's fine with the opening discussion.
Okay.
We're not. Educational programs and whatnot, and then it's just the logistics, how will it work, and like I told you, the sports is such a big issue.
So the board is generally receptive.
Yeah.
How about the general public? Were there people showing up saying it was not a nice idea?
No, we don't get that like Portland. We're lucky.
There's an advantage to that.
Yeah, we only have one or two people ever show up at a meeting, usually, you know, so we don't get, unless it's sort of underway. He brought it up and everybody was okay with proceeding and doing some discussions, but that's all we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Discussions and what are the barriers and kind of things that you're doing something like that. I think there's always been discussion in education, like I told you, we have a late start, so our attention to raise the
right
starts at the high school level.
Yeah.
So it's you know. So we kind of understand that little ones tend to get up earlier and they actually are more earlier prone.
Okay, good.
Okay.